The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. I am Mr. Michael Dean. It is New Year's Eve. What year is this? 2014. I'm talking to Mr. Dobby Barker. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been dragged away from a party to do radio?
I have been dragged away from a party to do radio, but that's okay. That's what I sacrifice for liberty. So I'm here to talk to you good folks.
You left.
You know, half the country is already in 2015.
Yeah, I know.
Or half the planet.
I know.
Somebody. There's a line somewhere where magic happens because of arbitrary numbers that people set thousands of years ago. And that's happening. It's happening.
See, the numbers aren't that arbitrary. You know, it's like... It's not like it's government. Government is an invention of humankind.
So is the year.
It is, but time, I don't know, animals.
If you cut the planet in half, there are not 215 rings. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you know, seasons exist. Animals have time. Animals measure time, not to the extent that they have atomic clocks on their wall, but yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, some animals are probably should be more concerned with time, isn't it? Some like fruit flies live like 3 days or something. And that's why
sounds familiar.
That's why they use them for genetic tests, because they can go through a whole generation much quicker than with mammals. So,
yeah.
What was the party?
If you ever want to drive yourself completely insane, try running your life on more than one calendar at a time. It gets very confusing.
Huh. I can't imagine what that would be like. I mean, I've run my life for very short periods of time on two time zones, which are far more parallel than two calendars. What two calendars have you tried?
Well, there's the one that I actually tried to do this with. It's called the Discordian calendar.
Middle Earth.
And it's 5 months, each of 72 days with weeks that are each 5 days, so that the calendar can be reused every year, because the days of the week are always on the same days of the month.
You are a
and
nerd.
So,
What kind of party did you leave tonight, Tavi?
It's just a New Year's party. It was me and some high school friends, you know, getting together and catching up. Some friends of mine sort of flew in from out of town. One of my buddies lives in Portland now, and he came in for the party. A buddy of mine lives in Sacramento. He came in for the party.
Wow. Coming in for a party.
We have reunions from time to time. We're that kind of group.
The Breakfast Club?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, so the two calendars thing, the nerd, how did that work? Like, did anyone else around you live by two calendars, or was it just you?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole subculture that uses this calendar. Wow. It's way more efficient than the Gregorian calendar, because you don't have to throw it away at the end of the year. You just erase it and start over.
Yeah, that sounds complicated. What are the advantages?
It's the calendar mathematicians would have come up with. That's what it is.
Yeah. It's like the metric calendar, sort of.
Well, so here's an advantage. There are only 5 days in a week. So that's three work days and two weekends. That's like 30% more weekend, or maybe 40 or 60%. It's more weekend. That's the point.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a leap year. No, there would be a leap year. It was St. Tibbs Day, which was just a day that was not on the calendar. It's like a day that is not a day.
Is this something that was created by Robert Anton Wilson in an opium haze?
Yeah, probably.
between being a gun runner for the Contras and the CIA.
Is that what he did? I was not aware of that.
No, it wasn't him. Who's the other guy?
Hunter S. Thompson.
No.
Carl.
Carl, yeah, the anarchist guy, the anarchy Hess? Without anarchy. Yeah, Carl Hess. Carl Hess was a gunrunner for hire and did it for anybody. Wasn't just for people he liked. And I think he actually, at one point, was doing it for the CIA. I don't want to be wrong on that, but there's a video on YouTube that if you haven't seen it, you, Davi, and you, the audience, you should go listen to it. It's Robert Anton Wilson and Carl Hess sitting at a table on a stage speaking for 3 hours at a Libertarian Party event in, I think, Denver in, I think, 1977 or something.
Is this them discussing the difference between socialism and libertarianism? That kind of sounds
that
vaguely
probably
familiar
that
to
probably
me.
Comes up, but it's those two guys talking for 2 or 3 hours. They're not going to stick to one subject, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I know the video you're talking about. There are not enough Robert Anton Wilson videos out there.
Yeah. Back then to make video, I mean, it took money. Not everybody had a high def cell phone in their pocket. Nobody did, actually. You had to have film, audio equipment, by the 70s, there was early video equipment, but it was still really expensive and required, trained personnel, and the quality wasn't very good. And, I mean, there's not a lot of videos of like anything from back then, unless it was important at the time. And, now there's 30 years from now, everything that's not important now that's considered important later, there will be video of it.
I read a great Robert Anton Wilson quote today. It was, I don't believe anything, but I have many very strong suspicions.
I like that a lot. Yeah, man. What are you sipping?
That's a way to live.
You having a tasty beverage there on Fiend Phone?
I'm drinking my coffee, my New Year's coffee.
Yeah, we're on Fiend Phone. You're coming in over Fiend Phone. You're flying low under Fiend Phone.
Yeah, we're about to be the first Fiend Phone of 2015.
Ah, so many firsts this
week. In fact, we may already be in some parts of the planet.
Yeah, so many firsts this week. There was the first ever Fiend Phone, which was connection, which was actually Derek and I. And then there was the first good sounding Fiend Phone, because he didn't have a good mic setup. Then there was the first good sounding Fiend Phone, which was Randy and I, 10 minutes later. And then there was the first Fiend Phone used on a radio show against the advice of the creator of Fiend Phone without further testing, which was you and I about 20 minutes later. We did a whole episode. Then there was the first three-way Fiend Phone call, full radio show last night. And this is going to be the first Fiend Phone of the new year, and also across a year barrier. Because right now,
yeah,
there's somebody in New York City probably listening to us, or Alabama, or Alabama might be central. I forget. It's one of those weird cusp states. But somebody on the East Coast or in Europe is listening to this now in 2015. So I guess Fiend Phone has already made it to the new year, even though I'm not there yet and you're not there yet.
Yeah, that's interesting. We are broadcasting into the future. How do you like that?
My dad always used to make jokes about, and probably still does, I just haven't talked to him today. My dad was always big on what I call like depression jokes, like depression era jokes, the things that he thought were funny when he was a kid that I probably don't think are funny, like
gallows humor.
Yeah. No, not gallows humor, more like kindergarten humor from adults, things that I don't know. Humor used to be, it used to take less to make people laugh back in the old days. There was less competition, I think. But he would, he was always big on that one of waking up on New Year's Day and saying, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten all year, that thing. I haven't brushed my teeth all year. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, I haven't used Fiend Phone. Well, next year, tomorrow, in an hour, I can say I haven't used Fiend Phone all year when we come back from the break. I'm gonna see the New Year countdown while listening to a commercial for like colloidal uranium heirloom body armor or something.
Yeah,
I won't be able to do it live.
Aquarius tactical water purifiers.
yeah, man, I'm psyched. So we sort of have a topic, and the topic
we do.
Yeah, the topic
is it 2015?
No. That's everybody else's topic. And most people's topic is kind of like year in review, and what they plan for the new year. My topic for tonight is life in review for you and I.
Groovy. That works for me. Do you do New Year's revolutions?
Revolutions. I don't really do it. Yeah. I think my resolution is I'm going to try really hard not to be as mean to Chris Cantwell. I heard from a mutual friend of ours that he literally cried when he heard the show the other day. And
wow.
I kind of feel bad about that. Like, it's fun to poke the guy and he makes people cry and stuff, but he might be becoming a better person with time. And I feel really bad that
I was waiting for that.
No, man. No, just kidding. I do not do New Year's resolutions because nobody keeps them, and I don't like to make promises. I'd rather have slow, steady improvements in aspects of my life rather than destroying my brain with alcohol and then waking up the next day toxic and going, oh, like basically people do that so they can like wipe the slate of a year. And I don't really feel a need to, I like my years. I don't want to wipe it from the slate and crawl out of vomit and urine the next day and say, all right, let's start over. You know,
I also don't want to feel like I have an excuse not to make a resolution any other day of the year. Like you can right the ship whenever you want.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But the last time I made a New Year's resolution was 3 years ago. And I kept it. And so I figured, you know, why blow that winning streak, you know? And so I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. And that was to work for myself. And now I work for myself. And so that's victory for me. No more need for New Year's resolutions.
That's cool, man. I've been working for myself since the year 2000. So coming up on 15 years.
I graduated high school in the year 2000.
You know, I was going to open the show with a song, and I was trying to get a hold of you earlier, but you were out partying. You were out with your real friends. Blah. You're a loser. You loser. You have a life. No, I was sitting here. I was sitting here in front of the computer trying to find a song. And then I realized I was going to call you and say like, what song can really like kick this show off? You know, what classic song? And then I was like, wait a minute. Davey Barker's musical knowledge and history begins with Nirvana. I mean, he's not the guy to ask.
It kind of ends with Nirvana, too.
That's funny, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like really passionately into other people's music for maybe 3 or 4 years. And then I was really passionately into my own music for maybe 6 to 8 years. And now I play with words.
You play with words. What does that mean?
Yeah. It means, you know, I listen to lectures instead of music when I go jogging.
And now the Mises Institute presents.
Oh, no. Mises, you have to turn everything up to 1.5 speed. That's how it works. It's Do you ever do that? You can do that with some audio. Speed it up to make it so it's not quite so academic.
I know people who listen to the Fiends like that all the time. They listen to every single episode we do, and they listen to it one and a half times the speed. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Shiny badges on your jacket, shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davey Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
It's the Freedom Fiends, and we have a tip from Nathan the Ninja Squirrel. We don't take phone calls anymore. That guy used to call us all the time, and we stopped taking phone calls. But now he emails, and that's a better way to do it. I'll actually consider reading an email on the air, because I just can't stop talking, so I don't want to talk to people on the phone. But if they write me, I will read their words on the radio sometimes. So Nathan wrote and said that using VLC Player, which is a really great program, using bracket characters like open bracket and close bracket on the keyboard will slow up or speed down the VLC Player playback of video and audio by 10% each click of a bracket.
Why would that be?
What do you mean, why would that be? It's a keyboard shortcut.
You mean like intentionally if you want to speed it up? Yeah. I thought you meant like as some glitch, this letter slows things down more than other letters. No. I was like, what?
No.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still working on Davey's sound.
I'm here. A little slow.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about life in review. So I always think about this. Couple things I'm thinking about. One is being a kid and thinking about being an adult and wondering what it'd be like. Wondering, the biggest thing I wondered was, am I going to be okay? Like, I lived such a kind of sex, drugs, rock and roll, dangerous lifestyle that I wondered if I was going to be okay. I wondered when I was 50 if I was going to be dead, broke, in a gutter, full of addictions, you know, beat to death in an alley. You have to understand, like, the things that I say on the radio to irk people, you know, I irk a lot of people. I do that in real life. I don't do it in real life anymore because I don't really, you know, travel much. But I used to do that, you know, like when I was drinking, I would go up to guys twice my size in bars and like insult them to their face. And I didn't get beat up much. I got beat up a few times, but I basically got thrown out of a lot of places. And, you know, then I'd sober up New Year's Day and be like, or every day, and be like, how can, this is unsustainable. I'm going to be dead or in a gutter in my own filth by the time I'm 30, let alone 50. But, you know, I always wondered if I was going to be okay. And then also, like, you know, if I was going to be okay, if I was going to be thriving. And I've managed to do all three. But let's discuss that a little, Dobby. What was your, and also just, would you have liked yourself, you know, like I always thought, like when I was 25, I thought, when I'm 50, will I like, if I met me at 50, at 25, would we like each other? So what are your thoughts on both of those things?
So I remember when I was a kid, pretty much until like my 20s, I had this like intuitive sense that I was either going to die at 27 or die at 81. And that something about the decisions that I made in my 20s were going to decide that for me.
Was this before,
so the fact that I,
before you'd heard of the 27 club, the, you know,
no, this was around that time. This is like when I was in a band called the 27 club.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
But no, just sort of even I guess before I picked the number 27 for that reason. But even before that, I always had a sense like I'm either going to die really young or I'm going to die really old. So the fact that I've outlived 27, I think I would be, I would call it an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I would have, if I had it to look forward to, I think that my previous self would have appreciated that decision, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Although that's no guarantee I'm going to die at 81. But the other thing is, there's this, you know, the idea of thanking a future self or a previous self. That's interesting because that's something that like my friends are really into as a toast at these parties. So
what's the toast? What do they say?
It's a toast to yourself. It's a toast to the me who comes after me, which is sort of a way of making a resolution of saying, you know, like the me who is self-employed or the me who successfully finishes college or whatever. Like this is sort of like a way of future toasting is something this group of friends is into.
Is that a thing beyond that group? It should be. It's pretty cool.
It's a Norse tradition. It comes from the wassailing drinking tradition, the drinking horn.
That's
tradition.
What I thought. I thought I'd heard it before, the idea before. You know, I really, I like a lot of things about Fiendphone. It takes a little more work to get all the sound perfect, but I really like that it doesn't keep out the background noise, which some people would say is a problem, but I like that I can hear you sipping coffee. Like Skype would just kill that. It would just be gone in the muffledness that is Skype. But, it's pretty cool, man. It feels more like we're in the same
room.
When
you get really good at it, you'll be able to tell what I'm drinking.
That's funny. All right. We're going to go sell some colloidal worms for Bitcoin and silver.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm really sick of this Google Fireworks interface. It's distracting out of the corner of my eye. So, Dobby and I are toasting to our future. Tell me more, Dobby. I'm intrigued and wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Well, I don't know. There's stuff in the past and stuff in the future to toast, I suppose. If I keep on schedule, by this time next year, I will have completed my third Survivor Max book, which would be exciting because that'd complete the trilogy. The second book is written and with the editor now. So if I can keep pace, I should be done by the end of the year.
Is the editor Daryl Perry?
No, I went with Prepper Press this time. They specialize in survival nonfiction and apocalypse fiction.
Daryl Perry and I share an ad on one of the back of one of the cards on Libertarians Against Humanity. You know, it's like the Joker card or something. has ads on the back
of
it. Yeah. Daryl Perry and I have ads on the back of it because we helped out a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a new ad written for the new year?
I got to get the website figured out. I'm eventually going to have clearance stuff and I'm going to advertise a clearance section, but I just haven't done it yet.
What does that mean? That you will meander the legal wranglings of allowing filmmakers to use popular songs in their movies? That's called clearance.
No, I mean, like, there are a number of shiny badges, lapel pins that I will be discontinuing this year. And so I'm going to sell the remaining inventory.
The where are they now file? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Because I got new designs and, you know, at some point there's just too many black and yellow designs. So yeah, I'm going to retire the old ones and replace them with new ones.
Apparently there's a new black and yellow ANCAP flag. Have you seen it? I think Lou might have invented it. It came out today.
Is it the thin yellow line? Because I think that's pretty clever.
Yeah. Yeah. I missed that memo. I posted on that. Oh, I didn't make it to the meeting and I missed the memo. Is this our new flag?
Yeah, it's been voted in and ratified by a super majority of the attending property owners. So
what's the deal with it? Is there a theory? Is it a takeoff on the thin blue line somehow?
Well, so, you know, we're anarchists, and so I have no idea what it means to anybody else.
Speak for
but
yourself.
I'll tell you what it, me- I'll tell you what it means
who's
to
this,
me.
Who's this we that you're pulling me into? That's real anarchist.
I don't
stop
know.
Stop telling
know about
me
the...
what. You ever seen that? You ever seen that graffiti that says "Spread Anarchy" and underneath it's in different spray paint?
Stop telling
me what to do. Yeah, that was a stop telling me what to do. We speak for yourself. Okay, go on.
So here's what I hope it means, although I have not expressed this to anyone. So I'm breaking news here. You know, the thin blue line is a bumper sticker that cops put on their civilian vehicles so that other cops who pull them over know they're pulling over a cop and give them special treatment, right?
Yeah, they pull them over and share some donuts and cocaine with them instead of giving them a ticket and beating them up.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe show them the latest sort of naked Instagram photos they stole off of someone's phone.
Yeah. Now, wait, does it say the thin blue line or is it just a thin blue line and that's the bumper sticker?
It's a black bumper sticker with a thin blue line through the body of the bumper sticker.
Wow. That's kind of bizarre,
too. I would like to mimic this.
That's kind of bizarre, too, because that they use that phrase still, because the thin blue line is the name of a fairly well-known documentary about police beating people up and arresting the wrong guy about an actual case of that.
Well,
that
this predates that.
But they're still using it. They're like, that movie's not going to tell us what to do.
This predates that. So here's the thing. I would like us to ape that bumper sticker exactly, except make it a yellow line. So black bumper sticker with a yellow line across the middle. And what it means to police is I contest every ticket.
Oh, wow. Okay. What's the bumper sticker going to be?
It's a thin yellow line. It's the same as the thin blue line bumper sticker, except it's a yellow line. It's black and gold for, you know, your ANCAP variety, your voluntaries variety. But what it should mean is that this driver contests every ticket, takes everything to court, wastes your time, is a nuisance. I am not easy sheep to fleece.
Isn't that just called a porcupine bumper sticker? Isn't that just a Free State Project sticker?
Yeah, I mean, they learned the insignia, but I would like it if this was a sticker that actually meant that and came to mean that to them.
Yeah.
Although I have not discussed this with the committee. I have no idea who created the thin yellow line Facebook page or what their intention was. This is just me talking.
It was Tom from The Art of Not Being Governed, who a cool guy. Okay. I hung out with him at Porkfest. Him and Lou had some long talks with just me and just the three of us. Yep. It was cool. My wife was there too, but she was drinking coffee and eating. She was in a bacon stupor because Lou was. Lou is like a Jewish mother with food, but he's like that with bacon. You know, like, here, have some bacon. Have some bacon. You need more bacon.
It's the assault kitchen.
Yeah, it is. You know, I saw a really interesting, fun show tonight. It's on Netflix. There's a new stand-up comedy thing by Nick Offerman. You know who that is?
No.
And it's called American Ham. Nick Offerman is the guy who plays Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec, the guy who's the libertarian government employee. Yeah. Who basically has decided, like, he's got a good job in city government, like kind of heading the city government. And he's decided that the best thing he can do is have that job and not let anything get done.
Well, he's laying the Legos, as Ben Stone would say. He's there to make the place less efficient.
Is that a reference to like tripping on things on the floor? Laying the Legos?
Yeah, the idea that he's there to put a wrench in the gears.
To sabotage? To throw a shoe in the gears?
It's not full-on sabotage. He's not destroying anything per se. It's more like monkey wrenching.
It's a work slowdown as a job description.
Exactly. It's putting the outbox in the outbox content in the inbox and the inbox content in the outbox.
Just waiting for them to figure it out. Switching the labels on them. Yeah. Well, one of the songs I wanted to play to start the show, we didn't start the show with music, was I was going to play Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols. And it's a weird song. It's not really about what I'd consider anarchy. It's about like chaos. And there's one of the lines in it is about, kind of monkey wrenching. It says, this is a really weird line. And when I first heard, like, I didn't know what this line said until I saw the lyrics when I first heard it in 1977. It says, give a wrong time, stop a traffic line. Like, you know, when someone asks you what time it is, just intentionally give them the wrong time and it'll end up causing a traffic jam is what that's saying, which I would never do. I would give people the right time or say, I don't have time to give you the time. I would never give a wrong time. But yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
There was a really funny scene in SLC Punk. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah.
There's one of my favorite lines in that movie is when he's making fun of the American kid with the Anarchy in the UK patches on his jacket.
Yeah. What's the line?
Cause it's like, well, it's not a line. It's a scene. It's just him making fun of like poser punks.
Yeah. That's why like, I liked the Sex Pistols and it was kind of the first punk rock music I heard, but they didn't really speak to me because it was so British. It was so about the British experience, you know, Anarchy in the UK, God Save the Queen. It was all about being like unemployed and in a place where you can't get a job and everyone's on welfare. And I'm like, I have a job. This doesn't speak to me. You know, I have a paper route. Yeah. So
it did sort of put in the mind of a young teen what anarchy was, though, like incorrectly so.
Yeah, incorrectly so. In the same way that Anarchy Burger, Hold the Government by the Vandals put the wrong ideas in people's head. But most people don't know it, you know, or if they know it, you know, they know the lefty version, if they know the real thing as opposed to the chaos and just be a punk and break stuff thing. You know, the best most punk rockers ever did was to understand some situationalism, whatever that stuff is, anarcho-syndicalism. Oh, all those roommates I had in San Francisco who wanted to lecture me at the kitchen table when I just wanted to have sex with many ladies and take lots of drugs and play rock and roll. I was not up for long lectures on economic theory at that point in my life.
Yeah, me either.
And there wasn't really, with people in the same room with you, there's not like a keyboard command to speed it up to 1.5 speed.
Yeah, you know, it really is too bad that bad economics makes intuitive sense at first blush.
Well, it's so many children.
People fall for it.
It's for children.
Yeah.
Adult
like the
children.
From each according to their need to each and no, from each according to their ability to each according to their need. Like that makes a kind of satisfying, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
fortune cookie kind of sense. But like it can't be extrapolated into anything as complex as an economy.
Yeah. It makes sense when you don't have anything, too. And you see that other.
Yeah. When all you have is needs.
There's a line in that show, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, where they end up this really bizarre series of circumstances where these people from like basically Saturday Night Live or something like it all end up having to fly to Nevada to get one of their crew members out of jail. Like he basically like, you know, somebody comes up and starts hassling one of the female members on the street of the cast. One of the male members sticks up for him and kind of like the guy who's hassling them on the street kind of like tries to assault the woman, and the male cast member kind of just pushes him away, and he falls into some bushes and ends up suing him for assault because it's on video. And then and when they take him to jail for assault, they're about to release him and realize that he has an active warrant in Nevada for a speeding ticket that was never paid, and they like take him to Nevada. And so they all end up taking the corporate jet to go to that weird little town in Nevada, Pahrump, and deal with the judge, who's played by John Goodman, of course, the really cranky, funny judge. And somebody says something like, you know, they call someone on the phone from the plane. They're like, where are you? What are you doing? He said, well, I'm on a plane with the cast of a Fellini movie and the world's only only communist billionaire. because they're like doing this big business deal with this Chinese tycoon, and I'm thinking about that, like, yeah, communist billionaire, what a concept. Why would someone be a communist once they're a billionaire? Why would they want to redistribute wealth? I guess
guilt. Liberal guilt.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, maybe it's that, you know, there is a legitimate sense of sort of subliminal guilt. If you're a billionaire and you're there because of government contracts, and you know that you got there by screwing over other people who were, you know, involved in free trade, then maybe you do feel guilty. Maybe, I mean, it's unfortunate you would turn that around to thinking the government needs your money. But yeah. That's where I think liberal guilt comes from, is people who know that their wealth comes from government aggression on some level.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, every accusation from a liberal is really a confession.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Change of scene here, a little change of plan. Dobby and I had planned, this is even news to Dobby, we were going to steer it back to what we started with about, you know, life in review. But I want to save that, I think, for the second hour, because I wanted to ask you, Dobby, about your reaction to the latest Stefan Molyneux video. And I want to get that out of the way, because I don't want to start the new year with pod beef. I want to clear the plate. I want to clear the pod beef off my plate for now.
And, yeah.
So Stefan Molyneux, who's this libertarian, well, he kind of is a rock star on the internet. You know, he's a big fish in a small pond.
He's a talk star.
Yeah. And he was like, used to make these videos that were really solid. Like, you know, the story of your enslavement, where he basically really well, in a convincing way, I don't know, he kind of hypnotizes you with his voice and his words and his accent and his weird eyes and stuff. But he he did these videos a few years ago that were really solid, and a lot of us liked them. And, you know, you can say us, speak for yourself, but no, a lot of people liked them. And then he slowly but surely went mad. And my theory is that I have two theories. One is
brain parasites.
Brain parasite. Yeah. I think he's turning into a zombie, or else he's decided that anarcho-capitalist, libertarian, voluntarist teenage boys who still live with their mother or recently left their parents because Molyneux convinced them to, don't have any money. And he loves donations. And, you know, he runs this thing called UPB, which stands for Unemployed Podcaster BS, which is his whole, like, unified theory of life. That's what Dr. Elvis H. Christ said that. Yeah, UPB stands for Unemployable Podcaster BS. I can't say the word on radio. So he's also, like, you know, been absolutely against intellectual property, and then, like, sued someone through a DMCA, you know, filed papers, used government guns to shut up censors. And actually is getting dragged into a court of law about that. That'll be interesting. But, and then just kind of got kind of misogynist and kind of racist. And But it was kind of, people were still defending him. But the kind of the final straw happened yesterday, the day before yesterday. He put out this video where he was defending the state and saying that, you know, the guy who got choked to death by the police for selling loose cigarettes, that there were victims, that was not a victimless crime. And that the
selling a cigarette is not a victimless crime, according to this guy all of a sudden. Yeah.
So basically, like, the only thing that people were still clinging to about Molyneux as well, all this other stuff, but, you know, he may be a racist, misogynistic, you know, person who uses the government guns to contradict and, you know, he's a hypocrite and he censors people, but he's good on the free market. I've heard that kind of apologism, but
yeah,
now he's not even good on the free market. And all, like, Larkin Rose today was like, I was wrong. I was defending him, but I, you know, all these people are like, I was wrong. And I've been posting around on the internet. I thought Molyneux was whack before it was cool. What do you think about Molyneux going full on brain parasite, insane weirdo?
I don't know, man. I like full on guffawed when I heard this video. Like, because so here's some background. So, I mean, obviously there's a multitude of causes, but Molyneux is the person who said the thing that finally broke the state for me, right? And that was his against me argument in 2007. And so I can credit him, although, you know, it's a little great man theory-ish to credit him, but I can at least say that he influenced me greatly and that I listened to all of his shows and I read a handful of his books and I used to be a regular monthly donor and I was sort of like in the Molly camp, right?
I never was. I liked his videos, but I never was a follower or a donator or anything. You donated at one point regularly, didn't you?
I donated regularly, monthly, automatically. I was on his board, all this
his
stuff.
His board? Oh, his yeah, I thought you meant his board of directors. You mean his forum.
No. I mean, I used to be in the message board. And
finish
so
it up. Finish
I'm
it up.
Coming all the way around to being just completely disgusted. This video, I can't make any excuse. I can't fathom any plausible explanation. It's got to be brain parasites. It's got to be alien orbital mind control lasers. It's got to be something. I don't know. Yeah. He's been replaced by a robot.
It's the pod people, man. It's the pod people, people. Molyneux is people. Molyneux is pod people. Yeah, man. Soylent Molyneux. All right. So we're done with him. We're going to come back in a year. It's going to be a year, a new year.
Molyneux who?
Who? I don't know.
Molyneux who?
Peter Molyneux.
Molly who?
All right. Worms. See you next year, Dobby, in about 7 minutes, 8 minutes. Worms.
Worms.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Happy New Year. I didn't even notice that it went to the new year. I was busy getting a file that Dobby wanted. I started the new year. I used to have this theory that whatever you're doing at midnight sets your tone for the whole year. And I remember one year I counted down the new year in a room full of people in my living room with a syringe in my arm full of methamphetamine with a tourniquet on, and like hit the plunger as the ball was dropping and then took the tourniquet off as New Year's it was happening, when everyone else was like sitting around drinking beer and smoking pot. And I'm like over in the corner slamming crystal meth and just like instantly turned insane at New Year's. And that was like, oh, that's going to set the slate for the rest of the year. Yeah. But this year at New Year's, I was looking for a Photoshop file for Dobby. So that'll set the pace for this calmer. This will be a calmer year than that year 22 years ago, I think. What do you think, Dobby?
I can dig it. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even remember what I was doing. I didn't realize that the year had transferred over until you said that you forgot. So I doubly forgot.
Yeah, but you're in California, so it's still last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I have, a good 53 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, Mike, who do we have on the call?
Yeah. Yes, Steven. yes, Michael. We have Davi calling on line one. Go ahead, Davi.
Hello, Davi. How are you doing? How are you doing today?
Long-time caller, first-time listener.
Did you touch yourself as a child, Davi?
Well, I mean, I suppose like technically I am myself. So yes.
I can't do this, man.
I heard that I could call this number for a little involuntary psychoanalysis.
Show me on the doll where the state touched you, Davi.
Where are we going? What are the questions?
Oh, I was going to ask you about your childhood. I was going to involuntarily psychoanalyze you in front of a room
full of
a few dozen thousand people. Yeah, man. So we're going to talk about life in review, looking back on being a youngster, looking at being an oldster, looking back on being a youngster. Tell me your thoughts, Davi. Lie down on the couch and tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I had a teacher that made us write letters to ourselves in the future. And agreed to send them to us 10 years later. And so I think she did it when I was like 20. I got this in the mail. And pretty much all I said to myself was, I hope you didn't sell my comic books. And I didn't, you know, lo and behold, I still have a lot of those comic books. I got rid of some of them. But.
Cool. Well, I wrote a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. And the last chapter of it is called Letter to a Young Me. And it's me at 46 writing a letter to me at like 20. And it's pretty cool. It's a fun chapter. There's actually an audiobook of it too. But the basic thing decision I came to was that me at 46 and me at 20 would like each other, and the me at 20 would have respect for the me at 46, but the me at 46 wouldn't want to spend much time with the me at 20.
That's funny. I was thinking just the opposite. Like, I feel like I would be like, you know, one of those older guys hanging around a kid trying to prove to him that he's cool too. And the kid would have been like, yeah, you're cool. Just like, leave me alone. I got better people to hang out.
Well, the younger in this chapter, the younger me is kind of like that. And also the older me is trying to give advice to the younger me, and the younger me just does not want to hear it. Yeah,
that's interesting, because I know that I don't want to take advice. How do you administer advice to someone? It's like fighting someone when you know their style, right? Like, how do you administer advice to yourself if you know that you don't like taking advice?
Well, I really think that people aren't ready for advice until their butt's kicked in something, you know? And that's what I learned in AA. Like, people aren't ready to get sober and stay sober until being drunk has become so painful that they really concede to themselves, you know? And that's true in everything. It really is. And I think that, you know, I mean, if you like suddenly had a brain parasite that made you love the state, you know, like, what advice could your friends give you? None.
You know, I think something that I could do that I would have accepted as advice if I went back in time and talked to a 13-year-old me is to say, you're right about all of these things. Stop second guessing yourself. I've been second guessing myself for 20 years. Believe me, you were right about this stuff all along. I think I would have taken that advice.
Yeah.
I would have taken that advice. Being told that I was right is advice that I would have taken at that age.
Yeah. I mean, the first advice in my letter to a young me is, you know, basically, you worry a lot about, are things going to turn out okay? Yes, they did, you know, but yeah. I don't know.
Now you've altered the parameters. So
I know it's kind of like the butterfly effect. Yeah. And also the fact that they can't, I did a lot of work to get myself to happy and healthy and not crazy and productive and self-employed doing things I like. But there were periods in the transition from, you know, the 20-year-old me to the 35-year-old me where I could have died, and it was kind of chance. You know, it's, some would say it's God, some would say it's chaos and statistics, but so I don't think it really would have been accurate to tell the 20-year-old me it's going to turn out okay, because it's kind of a coin flip at certain moments that it did.
It's like telling yourself, I rolled the dice and won, so you go ahead and roll those dice.
Yeah, I think it would have encouraged him to roll the dice harder too, you know. I think the fear I think the fear of ending up penniless in a ditch, in a gutter, may have kept him from rolling the dice harder than he did more times.
See, I don't feel like I rolled the dice that hard. I feel like I played it safe too much.
Yeah. It's because you didn't move far enough away from your parents early enough. Like literally when I, you know, when I left home like 4 months after my 18th birthday, actually, I was thinking about this the other day. It was actually after my 19th birthday, but I went to college when I was 17, so I was, you know, still being barely supported by my parents, but I was not living with them when I was 17 and 18. I was going to college like 30 miles away and really didn't come home very often, so I was on my own at 17. I moved out of the house, I moved out of the state and left living with my parents 4 months after my 19th birthday. It seems like it was after my 18th birthday, because when I was 17, I was already living on my own, but I wasn't supporting myself. But so 4 months after I graduated college, 2-year community college, 4 months late, like basically the end of that summer, I moved to DC and then moved to Virginia and then was homeless for a while by choice and then got a job and was still homeless. And was working in a restaurant while homeless and, like, you know, putting on a tie every morning in the rearview mirror of a car after waking up in a factory, an abandoned factory down in Georgetown by the river. Down by the river. I was living in a van down by the river. I was living in an abandoned factory down by the river that actually had rats in it. What really made me decide to work harder to get a place to live, other than it was getting near the, it was getting colder in DC and I didn't want to be homeless in the winter, was I had some like bread that I dumpster dived in my backpack that I was using as a pillow. And I woke up with a rat gnawing on my backpack. And I'm like, okay, it's time to take a hard look at my situation and wake up and change things.
I had almost the same thing happen. So I was at one point living in a tool shed and I had managed to find an old, like, abandoned mattress and dragged it into the tool shed and was sleeping on it. And I had wrapped the inside of the tool shed with garbage bags so that it actually kept out the rain. And one of the things that made me decide it was time to move out of the tool shed was when I realized that there were rats in the boxes under the mattress where I was storing my things.
Yeah, they don't make good roommates, man. I mean, they do if, like, you know, you are not homeless and you have a cute little rat living as a pet in a cage and you take it out and put it on your shoulder sometimes. But, you know, the wild variety that feel competitive of the fact that you're living in their living space and especially want your food and are willing to, like, chew through your face to get it. Nah, man, they're not that fun as roommates.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So, no, but but you were living in the same state your parents lived in. Like, you could go home if you needed to, right?
Yeah, I could, and I did at times. That's true.
Yeah, I didn't. When I left, you know, I left home and I went to D.C. I actually, like, left home, went to D.C. and lived with my friend. Like, I was, like, 17. My friend was 16, and we were living in his dad's mansion. Like, this guy is literally a corporate attorney at a big Wall Street firm and has a mansion in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Like, you know, 30-room mansion with, you know, 3 acres. And then at the end of the summer, like, I lived there for like 5 weeks. And then his dad came back from Chautauqua, New York for the summer and kicked me out after like 2 days. So I went from literally living in a multi-millionaire's mansion to being homeless. It was kind of an interesting, an interesting transition. But, you know, and I wanted to move. Then I moved to Charlottesville, Virginia for a couple years and I wanted to move somewhere. I was playing in a band and put out a couple records and I wanted to make an attempt at, like, making it in music, which didn't necessarily mean like being a star. It meant eking out a living and having, you know, like having people listen to my stuff and like it. And I wasn't really sure if I had what it took. So I decided I was going to move to either New York or San Francisco and play music in that town until everybody who listened to cool music in that town had heard my band. And if they liked it, I was going to keep doing it. And if they did not, I decided I was going to sell my bass equipment and become and buy a typewriter and become a writer. That was the plan. And I was having trouble deciding between New York City and San Francisco. And I decided San Francisco because it was so far away from my parents. It would make it harder to just come home for a while and then end up staying, you know, because I'm from New York State.
Yeah.
Like Chris Cantwell, we have a lot in common. And that is one of the things we have in common. We're from New York, not New York City, but from New York State. And so, yeah, I moved to San Francisco and you know, then discovered heroin. And it was all gravy from there.
Yeah, you know, for me, my parents were separated. And so I was always able to use one parent as sort of a safety net from the other one.
Whoa. Explain, young Davi.
Well, I mean, I'll say, okay, so when I was 17, I ran away from my mom's house, but I ran to my dad's house. So even though I had this sort of independence, there was no sense that I was going to be involuntarily homeless.
Yeah, or involuntarily committed. All right, we'll be back delving into all the ports in Davi's brain.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
It's hard to find a picture of a smiling junkie who's standing. Davi and I are trying to make this meme. Yeah, all pictures of junkies are like lying down and look despicable. We want the picture of the guy back when it's still working for him, when he's happy.
Yeah, the marketing for heroin is terrible. None of these people look like people I want to be.
It must be really good, though, because people do it, even though the marketing for it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, where's the, like McDonald's stock photo, I'm loving it, heroin junkie?
Davi Parker.
Yes?
Yes. All right, so Tell me more. Tell me more about your childhood.
Oh, so yeah, I was saying, like, when I was 17, my mom and I had irreconcilable differences, and I left. And so
who won? Who won?
I know what he won.
I'm kidding.
We get along better now.
Yeah.
But it was a dispute over curfew and girls and freedom and driving and whatever. And at one point, you know, after a long fight, she said, if you're not home by midnight, don't come home at all. And so I didn't.
You never returned.
And but I moved in with my dad, right? So like I had this like other sort of lifeboat out there. I didn't wasn't moving out onto the street or anything. And my dad was like a much more like laissez-faire parent. And so for my senior year of high school, I like moved to a different school and I moved to a different house in a different city. And pretty much did whatever I wanted to the point of like after school, I was with this group called the Mill Valley Weirdos in Mill Valley, California. And we used to go to Kinko's after school and steal copies to make zines and stay there easily till like 4 o'clock in the morning and then walk for miles and miles, like taping up the things that we had printed at Kinko's.
You were
and
basically
then go to the Holiday Inn.
You were basically with blogging with your friends before the internet.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then once we got around like 6 a.m. and we started to like see the sun come up, we would go to the Holiday Inn and eat the Continental breakfast because nobody checks to see if you have a key. And then we would just go back to school. And so like there would be nights where I was just out all night, like, and my parents weren't, my dad and my stepmom weren't worried about it because they trusted me as a responsible person because I had good grades and I was a smart kid and kept out of trouble and, you know, didn't do any drugs at the time and whatever. So I had that kind of autonomy, right?
Yeah.
And then in college, like I eventually made up with my mom and my stepdad and we started hanging out voluntarily occasionally on special occasions and things like that. I guess we're not really talking childhood anymore. Like how far back do you want to go?
Life. You're okay. Life. Keep going, man. Keep
going. Well, the first thing I remember is my birth. And people
do
think
not
that
remember your birth.
I remember my birth.
How?
I don't know how, but so here's what I have. I have sort of being whisked around with bright lights that I didn't understand. I have my mother's face smiling at me, like filling my whole vision and smiling at me. An intense, like my vision, right? Like it encapsulated my entire vision.
Got it.
And I have an intense like pain in my chest that I don't understand and blaming her for it. Because she looks so happy and I'm in so much pain and I'm mad at her for being happy. Wow. And that's all I have. And so I brought this up to my mom when I was like 18 years old. I'm like, does this sound familiar at all? And it turns out that I had like essentially like a bowel movement in utero and I had clogged my lungs with fecal matter and I wasn't breathing when I was born. And so they essentially like had to vacuum me out. Like they had to like go into my lungs and suck it out so I could breathe.
You're telling this story and I'm looking at pictures of junkies and it's about as equally as fun. I don't want to do the junkie meme. I changed my mind. I forgot how gross junkies are. All right, go on.
So I don't know like how that shaped me or whatever. Maybe that has to do with difficulty with my mom early on, was this weird infantile emotional reaction to choking to death. But Then we moved around. Like other than that, my earliest memories are like Saudi Arabia, China, India. Like we lived in these places for weeks or months at a time and then moved again. And so I never really formed any permanent relationships, but traveled the world and saw lots of different cultures and things like that. And it wasn't, and we weren't stable anywhere until second grade. And so I came into second grade like essentially like an immigrant. Like I was born in the United States, but I didn't remember anything about it by the time we got back. And you know, like kids were fighting over Nike's shoes and I was just getting used to wearing shoes because I was from neighborhoods where kids ran around barefoot.
Worms. Thank you, Dobby. Thank you for sharing. We'll be back with more of sticking our fingers in Dobby's brain after this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This is Freedom Fiends, Michael Dean talking to Dobby Barker. And before we go back to Dobby Barker's Saudi Arabian childhood and a user question, a listener question, a user, one of those heroin users. No, a fiend user question.
A fiend user.
I have some fiend sourcing to do. I want to ask the listeners for something. I'm searching for the right word, the right phrase, right one or two or three words. So in the Fiend Phone mission statement, I'm making a case for why people should bother to take a little bit of extra care to do audio that sounds good. And it does take a little extra work, whether you're using FiendPhone or not, but especially if you're using FiendPhone because it has no noise reduction. Like you can probably hear my heater in the background. It's about to turn off. I turn it on during the break. Yeah, there. So I have this line that said, true liberty will never be taken seriously until our production values match that of the mainstream media. Here's the thing. This program, FiendPhone, isn't just for anarcho-capitalist voluntarist libertarians. I'd like them all to adopt it, but it's bigger than that. And so I want a phrase, instead of true liberty will never be taken seriously, I want another phrase that will be more inclusive but kind of be a dog whistle so libertarians will go, that's for us. So I've asked a few people. I asked Dobby Barker, and he said, independent voices will never be taken seriously until our production values match that of the mainstream media. But to me, that sounds really NPR. And also, it's like, I don't really want all independent voices to be taken seriously because most of them are wrong and involve coercion. MK Lord suggested... we talked about putting voice recognition software in here so it doesn't work for status, but I don't think we'll be doing that. It'd be too much work. So, and you know, it might get a false positive. Like some voluntarist might be parodying somebody like, well, yeah, like if I just pretended to be Rush Limbaugh and said, we need some government, you know, like whatever, you know, it might shut off while you're doing your Liberty show. So MK Lord said, tactical liberation. I really like the sound of that, but tactical liberation will never be taken seriously until our production values match that of the mainstream media. It's kind of weird, and it also kind of sounds like the MOVE organization from the 70s. It sounds really like, it also reminds me of liberation theology, which is a communist plan to infiltrate the churches. So if anybody out there has a line that'll fit, that won't offend normal people, but will be a little bit of a, like, make libertarians go, oh yeah, okay, I get that. I need a phrase, one or two or three words, blank, will never be taken seriously until our production values match that of the mainstream media. So that's the...
What if it's just freedom?
Freedom will never be taken seriously until the production values match that of me. Yeah, I'm going to play with that. I like that. Freedom will never be taken seriously.
Because it's kind of a jab at media. Like, media is anti-freedom. Like, mainstream media is anti-freedom.
It kind of is, yeah.
I also suggested counterculture, but that doesn't fulfill any of the things that you asked for.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it would turn off some of the people. You know, basically, we want this thing to become widely used for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm a snob about audio and I want audio to be better. I listen to a lot of spoken media and, you know, even if I'm listening to something I disagree with, I want the audio good enough that I don't have to suffer through listening to it in my preparation to criticize it. Secondly, you know, just kind of the ego kick of like, we built this thing. We'd like to watch it spread. Thirdly, you know, we're going to be asking for donations for this and libertarians don't have much money. So we want it to be widely used. Derek and I do. And also it's kind of a network effect. You know, they always talk about the fax machine theory. Like, you know, one fax machine is useless. It has no value. You know, when the first fax machine came out, two fax machines has value because they can communicate with each other.
Twice the value.
Yeah. And every time you add a node to a network, each node becomes more valuable. And, you know, the same thing with a software program that only works with other copies of that software program. You know, the more people using it, like, you know, if this were to replace Skype, you know, it'd be great because we could have better sounding calls and I wouldn't have to say to somebody, okay, download this thing. Okay, now click on this. Now install this. Now here's how you use it. It would be like, you know, the more people that just know how to use it, you just say, okay, feed me it too. And then they'd know what to do, you know? So we want to appeal to everybody, but we also want to really appeal to liberty people because I really want the quality of liberty media to get a lot better because it's a lot of it's leaving a lot to desire, man.
There you go.
I
don't know. I've racked my brain. It's a tough request.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll come up with something.
I'll put the sentence in the show notes of this episode. So Davi, tell me more about do you want to talk about your Saudi Arabian childhood? I don't really know what his question is. Oh, his question was, I've always wanted to know how and when Davi decided that not everyone's opinion matters. I can speak about that. And then he said, I'd post this on the site, but I don't think any of the fiends read the comments anymore, which is probably true. I like that. I would rather people post comments there than send me emails telling me how wonderful we are or whatever, because then other people can read it and share it. But I do read every comment on there. I just don't have time to reply to them all. You know, I'm not Chris Cantwell. I'm not sitting around measuring my worth by hitting refresh on my stats and seeing who's talking to me. Like, literally, I discourage people from interacting with us. Like, send us money, tell two friends, but I don't want to read people's treatises. I don't care, you know, whatever. So I feel like not everyone's opinion matters. Do you?
I have one experience where this sort of brings to mind, and it wasn't really in Saudi Arabia, although it was sort of influenced by Saudi Arabia. So my parents, I was not raised particularly religious in any way, shape, or form. My parents are sort of on the agnostic spectrum, but both raised by Christians and both remarried outside of the Christian community.
Exogamy.
Yeah. So I was essentially raised with nothing, but I traveled the world and I hung out with kids. And so I sort of had a sense of religion from what their parents told them in all these countries we traveled to. And I kind of got the sense that everybody believed essentially the same thing, but that there were regional differences, just like food and clothing and things like that. And so I came to the United States thinking, oh, well, you know, this region must be Christian. Christianity must be the version of these, the version of these sort of immutable truths that they practice here on this geographic mass. And then I was sort of being witnessed to by a Christian kid in high school who was telling me about original sin and this sort of stuff. And I was thinking about all the kids in these countries that had never heard of Jesus and had never heard of this version of this truth. And so I asked this Christian guy, this Christian student, well, what about Buddha? Like, Buddha never encountered Christ. He never had an opportunity to accept this message. And yet he has a sort of similar story arc, doesn't he?
He's going to hell.
That's what he told me.
I knew it. I know this species of human. I mean, that's why some Christians, you know, spend their life going around the world proselytizing to people.
And that's what he told me. Because, he told me that's why missionary work is so important.
Because they have to minister to everyone on earth, because those people will go to hell, they believe, if they don't give. It's also like getting the choice. Like, you have, I think it's like some kind of like magic words you say at heaven to get in. Like, yes, I brought the choice to people and they said no to it. So they're responsible for their own going to hell or something like that.
Well, no, this guy was implying that they were responsible. Well, whatever. Everybody believes something different. But the point is that this was the first time in my mind that there was an actual sort of philosophical, theological schism between what good people in the world believed. And as a result, I had to reject this guy's opinion, and I had to therefore call into question what everyone told me.
Hey, teaching hospital moment. Back off your mic about an inch. You're getting a lot of plosives. Yep. I'll turn you up on my end. Just back off an inch. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just getting excited. So I think that is, in my mind, that's the first time that I ever thought, I don't care what this guy's opinion is anymore.
See, it didn't do it when you said opinion. Yeah, it's good.
Well, I backed off.
Yeah, man, it's a teaching hospital. So tell me more. Tell me more about.
So it's a little bit. It is framed by my experiences in Saudi Arabia, because that's where I encountered some kids. Like, one of my best friends when I lived there was a kid named Mutaz, who was a little, you know, Arab Saudi. I don't know if he was Saudi. I think he was actually some form of Pakistani or something. Incidentally, when we lived in Saudi Arabia, my dad worked for a software company and we were over there updating personnel records of some agency or something. They don't let Americans mingle with the general population. At least they didn't in the 80s. And so we lived in a compound out in the middle of the desert where they kept the Americans. Like, it was a compound, like a walled compound, 12-foot high concrete walls.
They warehoused you away.
Well, when all of the men drive away to work in the morning and none of the women are allowed to drive, you essentially have an internment camp full of women and children. Oh, and that's where we lived. It was like anarchy. Honestly, when I think about my life and I think about the most sort of freedom and anarchy that I ever had, it was all the kids who took over that compound when I was a kid, because we ran the place.
How'd you run the place? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, there was no traffic, right? So it's like kids who play in the street and there's no cars. So it's like... It's like a 12-foot high wall in a compound with open streets. There was a pool area. Some of the parents were, shall I say, moonshining. My dad was making whiskey in a basement bathtub, and we were having open-air speakeasies and poker nights and things like that. We actually got kicked out of the country because some of the parents got together and put on the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and they decided that didn't belong on their soil.
Wow.
But yeah, there was no cops. There were almost no parents, because all the mothers were bored and just hanging out with each other.
You got back
and
up so on your mic, didn't you?
I did. I got.
You're excited. Sorry, I can tell. Yep.
So, you know, we had a pool, we had a street, we had a ball, we had an early version of Atari. We had all the toys of all the kids and all the compounds and all the bikes and all the three-wheeler, whatever scooter things we wanted. And it was like Lord of the Flies, except there was no tyrannical murder.
It was the voluntarist.
It was what Lord of Flies should have been if they weren't all raised in boarding schools.
I think that should be your next book, the Libertarian Lord of the Flies. And not just saying, like, change it and make it all wonderful. Like, you know, there'd be bumps in the road.
Yeah. Lord of the Flies was pretty dishonest about children.
Lord of the Flies, the author admitted it was a case for government, for the need of government. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends, building the interwebs, one fiend phone at a time. So we could go redemption in the third act, Dobby, or we could talk more about our misspent youth. What do you got?
I'm happy to keep talking about this. It's kind of, I don't know. It's interesting. Ahead, it's exciting for me. Where do we leave off? I was talking about
Saudi Arabia.
Running the compound.
Yes. Yes.
Anarchy in the internment camp.
Remember, inch off the mic, inch further off the mic.
Yeah. The kids that I was hanging out with were flown in by this same software company, and they were from all over the world. And so there were Japanese kids in the compound and Arab kids in the compound. And there was a, I don't know if it was Somali or Ethiopian, but they were like dark African family that had like 12 kids, and they were like their own clan amongst all the other kids. One of my best friends was a kid named Omar who was Palestinian. And, you know, the other interesting thing is, like, I would say maybe half of the people in this compound were Muslim, but nobody, like, the idea of, like, a politically or religiously conservative or fundamentalist Muslim didn't exist in my mind. Like, these were very liberal people.
Yeah.
But part of that was because it was the 80s. Like, it was just a different world. So, yeah, there's that. I mean, Saudi Arabia was sort of what it is now. Like we had a censorship bureau, right? Like, they had the Department of Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil.
That had really what it's called? VHS tapes. Is that really what it's called?
That's really what it's called. And so any media that went into the country had to go through the Department of Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil, and we would get back magazines with pages torn out and VHS tapes with sections blacked out. But there was a black market in VHS recordings of American television. And so we got to watch our cartoons and things like that. But yeah, it really wasn't until I encountered this Christian kid that I realized, like, oh, there are some people with some whack ideas in the world. So that was, I think, the first time. And then there were teachers in school. There were teachers with dumb ideas. And, I realized that their opinions often didn't matter.
I was smarter than a lot of my teachers and got in trouble for correcting them when they were absolutely wrong on things. Like,
yeah,
if I were born a few years later, they definitely would have drugged me for being, you know, what they called hyperactive or attention deficit disorder. But luckily, they weren't doing that yet when I was in school.
I swear, I think I missed that by about a year.
Yeah.
Because I definitely had all the symptoms and had all the progress reports and all the parent teacher conferences and things that normally got a kid medicated. And my brother, even, who was just a couple of years behind me, he ended up with a prescription for, I don't know, it was Ritalin at first, and then it became Dexatrim, and
Compliacin.
Then Compliacin,
basically.
And he hated it. He used to refuse to take it, and it was this whole fiasco with, like, fighting with the parents and reminding him.
I don't want to take my speed.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah. And he's definitely better now that he's off it. And, you know, my mom thankfully supported him when he decided he was going to stop taking it after about a year. And he's a genius. My brother's a stone genius. And they were trying to ruin that.
They were trying to make him a stoned genius.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but not a good stone.
But it's because he was too smart for school. The kid was a computer engineering genius, and he didn't want to sit in a class and play with colors, you know?
What does he do now?
He does a lot of different things. His main sort of 9-to-5 job is that he sells electronics at Costco, and he's sort of a manager now there. Why but he also he, like...
Go ahead. Why isn't he a computer programmer?
Well, he is. He builds and sells computers, and he does tech support for people in Palo Alto, and he does all that kind of stuff on the side. And he also, this is completely different, he manufactures giant Jenga games. What? Like, he builds Jenga blocks that are, like, the size of a skateboard, and when you stack them up, they're, like, good 10 feet. Like, these games get 10, 12 feet tall and require, like, step ladders to continue playing. And he brings them to, like, Comic-Cons and gaming conventions and does, like, giant Jenga competitions.
That's very cool.
So he's something of a regular engineer as well, I guess.
Nice. It's been fun spending the New Year's with you. You're about to actually have your New Year's here in 3 minutes, huh?
3 minutes. Woo!
Will you stay on the Fiend phone with me afterwards? We need to check something anyway.
Yeah, no problem. I'll stick around.
Cool, man. It's been a good year. And, you know, I wanted you on for New Year's Eve. I planned this a couple months ago. It's been a good time. Worms.
Worms.
Worm.
I'll see you next year.
I'll see you next year.
I'll see you next year.
Yeah. This weekend is Diana on Saturday and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, on Sunday. Worms.
Worms.